This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the ifanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 107, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe and the Netflix. Whew. I'm feeling better.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
Hey, before we get started with the Pick of the Week show, we wanted to let you know that Ron spent a little bit of time talking to Gerard Way, writer of Umbrella Academy from Dark Horse Comics and the singer for My Chemical Romance. If you want to listen to that, you can look just below this show in the feed, or you can go to ifanboy.com and download it directly. And let's get back to the show. Hello, and welcome to the ifanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 107. I am Josh, and I'm here with one of you.
Ron.
And?
Connor.
That's good.
It feels like we just did this.
Well,
yes. Yeah.
What have you accomplished with your week?
Not so, a lot, I'll say that.
iFanboy.com is our comic book website where we talk about comic books and we like them. So each week, we'll all read all our books, and then one of us will have the job of picking the best one of the week. And you all know how that works. They write a review on the site, And then we come here and talk about that and other books on the podcast. And, of course, there's the warning. We're going to talk about what happens in the book. So if you haven't read them yet, you know, we would spoil them, and we don't want to do that.
I haven't read them yet.
Well,
you're woefully unprepared.
You're exempt.
All right.
There were so many books this week.
It was, like, I feel like the past couple of weeks we've been like, there have been so many books. There were so many books.
Yeah.
But it this week there were so many books.
And so we're doing a special episode, all books.
Yes. Yes, all books, no voicemail, no email. So if you're hoping to hear yourself, if you called in, wait till next week.
All books.
Either that or bring back the dreaded bell, which we didn't want
to
do.
Ron, you have to start this cavalcade off because you indeed had the pick.
I heard the bell. The bell's being reworked.
Put the bell away.
Sorry.
I had the daunting challenge. I spent like $96 at the store this week.
Jesus.
Yes.
It was ridiculous.
I spent 70, yeah.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. On those kind of weeks, it's always the one you don't expect to pop up and grab you, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what happened with me. Captain Marvel number 1, a five-issue miniseries written by Brian Reed, drawn by Lee Weeks. I almost said Brian Weed.
I went to high school with a Brian Weed.
Brian Reed and Lee Weeks.
Brian Reed suddenly everywhere all of a sudden.
Brian Weed, yeah. For those who don't know, Brian Reed. Say it, my God. Brian Reed was the – he teamed up with Bendis and co-wrote the Ultimate Spider-Man video game, and that kind of got his entryway into comics somewhat. And he's been co-writing Illuminati with Bendis, and then he apparently very quietly has been putting together a pretty nice run on Ms. Marvel recently. And so it looks like he's got his kind of niche of the Marvel universe with the Marvel characters as he tackles Captain Marvel. To give a little background for those who aren't maybe Marvel zombies or aren't aware of the madness that's happened in our lives for the past year, this big thing called Civil War happened, and
we promise never speak of that again.
I know. But in order to understand this, you need to understand what happened was that they Civil War, you know, big, huge crossover, big event, changed the status quo, dreadfully late, Steve McNiven sick, delays, blah, blah, blah. Right around, it was like January or February, right before it ended. Oh, seemingly out of nowhere, they brought back Captain Marvel.
It was so inexplicable.
Yeah, it really was. Captain Marvel was he was a character. He was an Avengers character. It was around in the 60s and 70s. Who, in one of the best stories Marvel's ever told, died. There was a story where he catches cancer. He doesn't catch cancer. He
catches the cancer.
He caught the cancer, and he dies of cancer, which is – it was a tragic, you know, tale, and he was a hero.
It was grounding the heroes in reality.
Exactly. It was really, really good. One of those ones that you really hold up in the Marvel canon on a high shelf going, this is what, you know, what the realistic kind of set in our world universe Marvel is can produce. And he was also one of those kind of Bucky, Jason Todd-esque characters that are supposed to stay dead.
Well, this is the year for that to go out the window.
Exactly. So seemingly for no reason, as opposed to bringing him back from the dead, what they did was they plucked him out of time, and they brought Captain Marvel from just before he gets cancer to our present. Iron Man puts him in charge of the prison in the negative zone. He's the warden.
42.
It made no sense, because then after that, he never appeared again. Never even mentioned it, exactly. And so when I heard that they were going to do a Captain Marvel miniseries, I kind of laughed. I said, yeah, good luck with that one. You know, because it was just a completely useless bringing back of a character. It was just completely, you know, I don't know. It
had no point. It seemed to have no point.
Yeah, it had no point, and I know, you know, and some might disagree with me or whatever, but it also, to me, cheapened the original story of his death and the legacy of the character, because it's kind of like, you know, yeah, that didn't really matter, because now he's back, and just ignore that.
Well, now you're losing the grounding in reality, and you're on par with DC. And
exactly. So fast forward to, you know, to Wednesday, when I sit down and I crack open Captain Marvel number 1, partially because, you know, I'm trying to give things a chance. I'm trying not to be so quick to judge. Trying to be, you know, a little bit better of a better comic reader. So I'm like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. And I was just immediately out of the gate, I was completely surprised. We had about 4 pages of like Civil War kind of recap, where apparently Captain Marvel made a split second appearance in the big final battle right before Iron Man and Captain America fought, and one of the only people to see him was Spider-Man, and Spider-Man kind of freaks out saying, you know, where's Captain Marvel? You know, it's like, wasn't it enough to tarnish the memory of Thor? He had to do it with Captain Marvel too, because he thought that it was a clone.
Yeah.
You know, and which I thought was a really good kind of like one of those moments, those in between panels moments that we know happened in Civil War that we would have liked to have seen in like the Frontline or one of the other books, but really didn't. And had they done this in Civil War, it would have made a lot more sense for bringing back the Captain Marvel character, but whatever. But then after that, there's just a beautiful series of pages of like space. And I know I'm a little dorky, but like Todd Klein did the lettering and the title page, just the lettering and the font used and just the layout of it was just really...
You are dorky.
I am dorky, but it really kind of impressed me. And immediately 6 pages in, I'm like, okay, maybe this is better than I think it is. And go through and we find out that Captain Marvel, since he kind of left his post at the prison and has been living in France and Paris just as a regular human, and Tony Stark sends somebody... I don't know who this character was, but apparently some former agent character who's in France, to Tony Stark sends to go find Captain Marvel. She tracks him down and says, listen, you know, Iron Man wants you to come back. And we get this insight into Captain Marvel and what he was and what he meant to the world and what he meant as a character in the Marvel Universe that really I think a lot of people reading Marvel comics didn't really know about, that he was really kind of seen as this kind of very, you know, powerful, very almost, you know, godlike character, so much that he's inspired a church that's been in, you know, kind of devout followers in his, you know, in his name, and they wear kind of robes that are similar to his costume. But what's interesting is that we see that he didn't want to be the warden in the prison, and he doesn't want to be Captain Marvel returned because he doesn't want to remind people of how he died.
He feels ashamed because he didn't die as a soldier.
Exactly, he didn't die a warrior's death, and he's absolutely ashamed of it. And eventually comes to the realization that, you know, he might be ashamed of it, but, you know, but right now, today, he's alive, and that means something. And it ends with this great kind of inspirational return, you know, where the Avengers are fighting some big, you know, almost Iron Giant-esque robot. And
I know it's the Iron Giant, dude.
Yeah, it is the Iron Giant. And they're fighting on Earth.
There's nothing about that.
And it looks like they're getting their asses kicked when all of a sudden this, you know, big bolt of light goes right through his head, and it turns. And the last page was the stunning page, and that's really what got me, is that on top of this robot wreckage is Captain Marvel, and, you know, kind of saying, you know, even though I may die soon, today I'm alive, and today I stand as a warrior and say I'm here, I made this happen. And it was just kind of this kind of, you know, inspiring moment that made me realize Captain Marvel is the character they want the Sentry to be.
Yeah, that was a really brilliant, if I can stroke your ego, realization on your part. It made Sentry so redundant.
Exactly.
This miniseries, when I read it, and Sentry makes an appearance, doesn't he? Or he's talked about?
Yeah, he's talked about, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like just mentioning him in the same book as Captain Marvel, you realize how much of a pale comparison Sentry is.
Oh, it's forced, you know.
Is Captain Marvel that all-powerful?
But yeah, no, because Captain Marvel, the majority of his – Captain Marvel's powers come from those two gold bracelets, the quantum bands, and he pretty much has cosmic-level power. Like, he is, like, Thor level.
Oh, see, I thought it was, like, Wonder Man level.
No.
No. He was a big deal.
He's a badass. Yeah, he's totally badass. So,
which is why the irony of him dying not in combat, but just of cancer.
In your mind, do you guys do what I do, where I refer to the Marvel handbook that I read however many decades ago, and like, oh yeah, he does 80 tons. Yeah, he does 10 tons. He does.
Yeah, no, you mean the one you read 10 years ago? You mean the one I read last week?
Yeah, okay, that will work too. But like in my mind, I'm always like Spider-Man, 10 tons. Plus 100.
I love those handbooks with all the where you can see what their level of power was, and yeah, it was great. So anyway, so it really kind of, you know, and it's tough because I understand, you know, it must be difficult for Marvel because they know they have this great character who fills this icon role that they want to have filled, but they killed him, and so like this is the way around it. I don't know if at the end of this miniseries he's going to be sticking around or if he'll send him back into time. I don't.
Well, they're talking about how they have the dilemma is that you can't keep him out of time because then he won't die when he died before, and then it'll be all screwy.
Probably do it like they do with Barry Allen, where Barry Allen's never come back, but he shows up out of time every once in a while when they want him.
Maybe. I feel like I've seen Barry Allen more than I've seen Wally West.
Yeah.
I know, you're right. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's how once you introduce the being able to pluck somebody out of time, you can do it whenever, you know? But it was also that they didn't explain, like, he doesn't know how he got to our time. Like, which I think was good. Like, Brian Reed really picked up on the recoverable plot points that Paul Jenkins left by writing The Return, and really made – he kind of made lemonade out of lemons. I hate to use a cliche or whatever, but, like,
you love using cliches.
Yeah, I do. But he took a really bad situation and in my mind made a good comic book. And Lee Weeks, I gotta admit, he's one of those artists. I mentioned this in the review on iFanboy.com. He's one of those artists that I know by name. I'd be like, oh yeah, Lee Weeks. And aside from that one run on Daredevil, I don't know what else he's done.
He's done like everything.
Yeah, he has. I was looking at his profile. He's done everything. And
he's like Marvel's Jerry Ordway.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a combination of
Stefano
Guadino's inks I forget who did the colors, Jason Keith's colors, but this whole the artistic presentation, I'm telling you, that last page, I was like, I want that as like a pinup. That last page is great, you know. So anyway,
yeah, the art was really good. He did the Winter Soldier one shot.
Yeah, it's almost like a more comic booky Jay Lee on that last page. You know, not as an erratic Jay Lee. You know what I mean?
The rest of the book in all three really looks like that, though.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean the rest of the book looks good. I mean, it looks classic Marvel, but it, like I said, with a modern kind of take on it. You know, so
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I was pleasantly surprised by it. I didn't love it as much as you did, but I didn't dislike it. So in that sense, it was.
Yeah, well, and don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm not. You know, again, I'm not. You know, we define this pick of the week as the best book.
Right.
Personally, we found this.
Sure.
This is the one book that I wanted. I had to write the review first. Then you guys would have found it after I wrote the review. But like, this is the one book that I wanted to call you both to be like, did you read that? You know, like that's it moved me that much. You know.
Yeah, I kind of had the opposite effect. I read this and I was like, oh, Connor, don't even bother. And then you picked it and I was like, really? And then I read it again today and I was like, maybe I missed something. I didn't miss anything. I don't know what you saw. This felt to me like the most average book. Like, I was like, oh, it's just this kind of thing. And maybe...
Well, I think if you've got no connection to the character in the past, you won't be as moved by his return.
I guess, but, you know, like, the whole thing with the cult, I was like, we've seen that recently. You know, in DC
and but keep in mind, I mean, this is the first issue, so I don't know where he's going with this. I mean, it could very well be, I could have egg on my face at issue 5, and this is the most awful thing ever printed. I fully acknowledge that, mm-hmm. But for first one out of the gate, it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
I thought this was, I mean, I don't think it was bad, I just thought it was really, it was nothing that really grabbed me, and that I thought, this is why we're different people.
Exactly. But other than that, it was a huge week in every comic universe as far as I can think of, right?
Yes.
where to begin?
New Avengers 36. It's a little strange because the Avengers timelines are so far off that you keep bouncing between times. You know, the last thing we read with them was the big scroll reveal in Illuminati, so you want to jump right into that, but
it's got some unfinished
business. Avengers is slightly behind.
Right.
You know, it's funny about the last few issues of New Avengers is that I've really had this, like, afterwards of, like, I think I liked that a lot, and I'm not quite sure. But, like, and then I have to sit there, and I go over it in my head, and I flip through it, and I'm like, no, I liked it. I did. But I really, like, I have to think about it for a second, because it's... I don't know if it's just unorthodox in the way that it's set up.
Bendis is really challenging us as readers, I think. I mean, because he's playing with the timeline, he's changing the device, mm-hmm. he's making almost each issue in and of itself a unique kind of experience.
There's a lot in this issue.
Yeah, there's a lot in this issue, and I personally really liked the first half with the, you know, he kind of got around... He got around the whole fight and what happened by having Luke Cage telling Jessica Jones what happened afterwards, which I thought was an interesting device, a bit of a cop-out. The one thing I didn't understand is that was it, you know, essentially all of Manhattan gets hit with a chemical bomb that causes people to turn into Venoms, and that's mm-hmm. what they fought. And apparently Dr. Doom did that?
I assume that.
I don't think it's important.
Yeah, okay.
I say, for me, the first quarter was the least interesting part, and I wanted that to be over as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Well,
Venom fight.
I think, and I might be wrong, but it feels a little like he was trying to make the statement that if you're Luke Cage, then these sort of extinction-level events happen all the time and they're not really that important.
Right. Like telling your wife about your day at work when you're in bed.
Right, they're not important, but they're not significant. Right. So, like, where you're seeing it from another side, I suppose. And it felt like a lot of people were thrown off by that. Like, they were like, I wanted to see the symbiote fight, and I was fine it was over. I was cool with that, because
happy when it was over.
Yeah, I didn't need that. But it was like, I think the idea was that if you were reading any other book, it would have been a really big deal and issues long and blah, blah, blah. But in this, he was like, yeah, so this happened today. Really? Yeah. You know, I thought it was neat. Yeah.
So the big reveal at the end when they track down the hood and then it ends on the last page where it looks like apparently every hero in the Marvel Universe, that's the Doctor Strange thing, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. It's a good cliffhanger, though.
I definitely thought so, and there was a sense of danger. I really liked when the Avengers are all sitting there like, we can't do that. That's too much. And like, you never hear that. You never, ever hear that where they're tactically saying we can't take them. Another thing that I heard people saying is that, like, Bendis has made the Hood into somebody, you know, formidable, I suppose. Yeah. I have no problem with that, because if he's not going to, you know, like... What
they need
could,
formidable villains.
They do.
I'm fine with that. I love it. Yeah.
Right, but they can't keep making like the same. You know, it's like, oh, it's Ultron again. They need new things. So if you have to make another character who's new and you make them into something, somebody powerful, there's no problem with that. That's just creating, I think. Yeah. Or it's even using some of the materials that they had around.
No, absolutely. I have no problem. That's the part I was looking to get forward to. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to get to that, the Hood part, and that's, I'm looking forward to the next issue a lot. I think it's going to be good.
I love how they were intimidated by the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah,
that's
the one thing on the art side, I've been loving Lionel Yu's art this whole run and everything, but I honestly didn't, between having Frank Cho on Mighty Avengers and Lionel Yu on New Avengers, I never thought an issue of New Avengers would be the boob-tastic spectacular.
It certainly was. Jessica Jones and Drew.
Jones, Spider-Woman, Wasp as a Venom. Like, there were boobs on air, like huge... massive boobs.
It was a little weird.
Yeah, it was really weird.
He also really tightened up his pencils on this one.
Yeah, he did.
A lot. And I think it worked. I thought it was a really good-looking issue. The panel layouts on this were really interesting, too.
I really want him to draw Wolverine.
Yeah.
I think the character he does the best with is Wolverine.
He was on the book at one point, I think.
That's how he started. That's what his career started with, on Wolverine. So, yeah.
I'm pretty sure I liked this a lot.
Well, as long as you're pretty sure.
Yeah, that's fine. That's the best I can give you.
All right, then. So, moving on.
So, I remember I read the Avengers Initiative, and I said, you guys need to read this. And it wasn't because it was a particularly good book or bad book or anything like that, but something big happened in the Spider-Man mythos, really.
If Marvel, not the Spider-Man mythos, the entire, if they choose to use this, this could be our first Civil War retcon.
Yep.
It is. No, it totally is. I mean, that's the thing, is that, like, you know, after reading this issue, now I know they're bringing Captain America back.
Well, we knew
that. They will undo the Civil War status quo eventually, slowly but surely. The big thing
I never had that. There was never any doubt in that. I'm just surprised they're doing it so quickly.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
In this book.
Yeah, well, explain what happened.
Well, basically, Peter Parker's out, and I read this a little while ago, so bear with me. He ends up in a fight with three guys who are using the Iron Spider suits that Tony developed, which piss him off. And they end up having to team up against a villain, basically. And so they each do each other a turn, and then at the very end, there's a bunch of reporters around talking to Peter Parker, and they all turn themselves. They use the cloaking device in their suit to turn themselves into Peter Parker. And so
they change their costumes to be a black Spider-Man costume, a red and blue Spider-Man costume,
right.
An Iron Spider costume, and Peter's in just jeans and a jacket and a hat.
They basically plant a seed of doubt as to whether Peter Parker. Like, in the culture, whether Peter Parker is actually Spider-Man or if that was a hoax.
You know, even more so is what they do is that they all appear to be Spider-Man, and then when all the press is there, they change the costumes to all look like Peter with the hat and the jacket, so they all look the same. And they tell the press, oh, no, Mr. Parker stole a government suit. Spider-Man's been a government agent all along. And it, like you said, it plants that seed of doubt, and you've got the reaction of everyone going, no, but Parker said he's Spider-Man. Now you've got the out where he can be like, I'm not Spider-Man. What are you crying? I stole that suit. I was doing for the government, you know? It's
kind of a Daredevil thing where
it is exactly a Daredevil thing.
Some people are going to think he's Spider-Man, but other people are not going to believe it. And
yeah.
It's strange that it's happening in that book. It's not being dealt with at all in the Spider-Man books.
What Spider-Man?
Exactly.
Yeah, what Spider-Man book?
And then, as far as this book goes, the clones, the Iron Spiders were all – is MVP, was it? Is that –
Well, that's the way. The last page, the Iron Spiders come back to the base, and they all take off their masks. This was a problem. See, I read this issue because Josh said to. I hadn't read the previous issues at all, except for the first one. Then the way the art was drawn, they take off their masks, and it appears they're all clones of the MVP character. But the way that they were drawn,
I kind of forgotten about.
Yeah.
They looked like they were clones of Spider-Man, which...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We didn't know MVP. The only thing that gave it away was that the German professor guy was pissed that they did that, and they kind of rebelled against their kind of clonal programming. And the
clones always rebel.
The MVP body that was, I guess, what was modeled off of them is in a little holding tank, and he's grinning. Yeah, so I don't know.
I mean, and at first, when I read this, I did think... I was like, are these Spider-Man clones? Would they do that?
That's just a problem with the art and not distinguishing the characters.
But at first I thought, that's ballsy. Yeah.
That's what I thought you were talking about. I thought, oh my god, they cloned Spider-Man.
I was, and I realized later that actually wasn't the case. But still, just the fact that they fixed the Spider-Man or, you know, moved it along in this book is so strange, even though Dan Slott's one of the writers of the new Amazing book.
I really like this Spider-Man, and it makes me look forward to his Amazing Spider-Man more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that ever comes out.
And next year.
Next year.
So that was the whole...
I'll be too old for comics by then.
Avengers Initiative, wow, a major book. It totally, I mean, I wonder how many people read that and picked up on it. And it's like the kind of thing where it's just a seeded out, lying dormant, that if they want to make explode in the Spider-Man book, they can. You know,
yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I think that they need to fix it, obviously, but at the same time, like, what was all that about?
Yeah.
They never mind it. They never got any good stories out of his identity being exposed. They never did anything with it.
They got Aunt May getting shot, then we got one more day.
They basically got – what they got was a bunch of publicity in the mainstream media, and that was it. They never got anything else out of it.
Well, when you're running a business, sometimes that's a good thing. So
then the other problem with this book then, this Avengers Initiative book, is that I don't if there's an overall story, it's moving really slow because they're doing so many other things. Like, this was a fun issue, but get to the story of the book. Whatever that means.
I mean, like, I like Dan Slott as a writer, and I'm excited for him on Spider-Man, and I don't know how much of this is his fault versus not, but this book is not the book I was sold before issue one came out. You know what I mean? Like, it has not delivered the vision that I thought it was going to be. So.
I think he has to drive too much of the Marvel Universe through this book, and he doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're trying to make up for everything else in the pages of this. Like, no, it'll be explained here, but because of that, this can't get on a track to drive forward. Next!
X-Factor 25 is part 3 of Messiah Complex, and this is the first event book we're going to talk about. There's a second one coming up next, and I think we're at two different ends of the spectrum here.
This one's just getting started, and the other one's just ending.
Or quality spectrum.
Quality, too. I was really worried about the Messiah Complex crossover because I was afraid once it started bouncing into the other books and other writers started writing it, like similar to that awful Beast thing that went on through the X-Books, that it would lose quality. I don't know, Connor, if you shared my concern about that. Did you think the quality was maintained?
Yes.
It totally was.
Yes.
Like,
it was really good.
Ridiculously good.
Now, I'm not reading the Messiah Complex. I don't want to. And when I first heard, like, it's going to take over a title that I really like, I was like, oh, that's annoying. I don't, you know, like, I hate when I have to do that. It happens sometimes. It's fine. I understand. And I don't really care about the story going on. But I can definitely see that this was really well done. It was a good issue. It was fun to read. I'm not going to follow the Messiah Complex story. I don't care. But, like, he's still, you know, it's still the voices of those characters and everything, and so it was good.
Yeah, it was, I mean, and I hope that your stubbornness or whatever isn't going to keep you, because this has been really good, and I read the first couple, I just didn't like it.
I don't care.
Yeah, but, like, what I was afraid of when it got into the other issues was that it would focus on just the folks in X-Factor and just the folks in New X-Men, blah, blah, blah. But this, I mean, Jamie Madrox and Richter were only in it for like a third of the book, maybe half.
No, Cyclops, and Wolverine,
Cyclops, and the new X-Men, it's truly being like, I really feel as if the X-Men are, I hate to say it, but the X-Men are united in this event. And
ugh.
Yeah, I know, I'm sorry. But and that, you know, we see Madrox and Richter hatching the plan to go undercover to the undercover with the people. I forget what they're called. I want to call them the Purists, but that's not it. I forget what it is.
The Purifiers.
Yeah.
Run by Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Saw that too.
And then at the same time, Madrox and Layla Miller go to visit Forge in Dallas, which was awesome. We haven't seen.
What's
them.
With all the goateed Marvel characters being douches?
Forge wasn't that much of a douche.
He sent Layla Miller and the clones out without.
He didn't mean to. What happened was the plot that they wanted to do was that Forge had invented a time machine, and they saw two alternate realities where mutants were present in as well. So they made two dupes of Jamie to go into those realities, find the mutant, and then immediately kill themselves so that Jamie would then get the knowledge. Genius plan.
But Jamie didn't tell Jamie that.
Well, the Layla thing wasn't on purpose, but the douchebaggy thing
was he didn't tell because he said it was a one-way trip. Because he doesn't know if that's going to work when you're talking interdimensionally.
You just love Forge.
I like Forge. But then what I like about Forge is that if you open up to the page where he's got the time machine when the first dupe goes back in time, he built the time machine. It's kind of like a what's the spinning thing? Like a centrifuge, and it's an X. Yeah. It's like, I love how they just, you know, they keep working the X theme throughout all everything they do. I just like it. Yep. But it was great. It was a lot of fun. So I'm glad to see it.
For me, this is I'm not reading this because I think it's going to be bad. I'm not reading it because I'm not interested in it. Whereas World War Hulk, I just thought it was going to be bad.
Well, you were right.
Yes, I was. Can I just listen? If you liked World War Hulk, that's your thing. That's good. But if you knew it was going to be bad and you kept buying it, I have no mercy for you.
So did we all buy it? I mean, I thought I was going to be the only one who bought it.
No, I bought it. I told you I would buy it. I hate you for making me buy this series now.
Sorry, my bad. I stopped it. I don't remember if I stopped after one or two, but.
Josh, how did we surmise this series would end when the first issue happened? Who would be the major throwdown?
I'm gonna guess it was the Sentry.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a shock. And also, were there in fact no stakes because the Hulk wouldn't kill anybody? And so, what's the point of the whole thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Basically, yes.
Wow.
It was bad. But I'll give you guys.
It was beautiful though.
I'll give you guys the key to enjoy this comic. Don't read any of the word balloons. Yeah. Only read the sound effects. this should win an Eisner for best lettering. And I know, I mean, Chris Eliopoulos did the letters. We know he's one of our favorite letterers. But, like, best lettering as well as best sound effects. I mean, the two-page spread when Hulk and Sentry – when Hulk is saying is on your heads and he punches the Sentry, the sound effect is Spakoom, S-P-A-K-O-O-M. The one under it is – Sprackom, Sprachomm. Like these sound effects were hysterical. I'll go back and read the book. Only the sound
Quagloom.
Yeah, they're great. Like,
are those in the script?
I actually emailed Chris to ask him that, and he said somewhere in the script, some weren't, somewhere Greg Pak, somewhere him. He said they were all kind of mixed. And actually, he said, towards the end, he said it got so bad that some of the sound effects are just the initials of everybody who worked on it. Like, towards the end, it's JR, JR, KJ, CS for John Romita Jr., Klaus Janson, Christina Strain. One is GPK, GPK, GPK. It's almost as if they knew that, like, all right, let's just get this done. Let's just have fun with it. It's like...
Well, the thing is, though, this was supposed to be just a fun book, but it was actually so bad that people couldn't even have fun with it.
Well, some did. I mean, it was...
I mean, some did, but anybody looking for any kind of a story, though, didn't, I mean...
No, there was no story.
It
ends basically with the Hulk. You find out that the Illuminati didn't actually kill all the people on the Hulk's planet. It was one of the Hulk's friends, and then... They capture Bruce Banner, Rick Jones maybe gets killed, and they've got Hulk in this holding cell, and now we find out on the dead planet where the Hulk came from, rises the son of Hulk.
Jesus.
And so
the Hulk apparently is going to be red.
Yeah.
He comes back. It's awful.
Well, if you change his color, that's as good as having a real story. You can sell covers on that.
Yeah, so go read the sound effects. That will make the book better. So.
Crack-oom!
Wolverine number 59, conversely, it was not connected to any sort of storyline or event or anything like that. But I thought it was interesting, similar to Avengers Initiative, in that Mark Guggenheim's really kind of – he's going to be like a Barry Windsor Smith and define a bit of the Wolverine character for us.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting. Say what you will about the Howard Chaykin art, I'm enjoying it. But, you know, essentially we find out that, you know, Wolverine, you know, keeps, you know, it, we go, we kind of travel through Wolverine's life and through, you know, trying to understand why he is and who he is. And he fights every sort of iteration of himself, from the Weapon X Wolverine to the Hulk first appearance Wolverine to the brown suit Wolverine. And
even before that, too, though, when he's in World War One and other
times.
And what I love is that what I thought was great about it is in doing that, he has Wolverine's fighting himself, and he's saying that, you know, you've lost your edge. You're not as good as you once were, you know? And I thought that was really interesting and really ballsy, I thought. You know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was you know, bookcased around a stupid concept.
Wasn't the end of his last run like a metaphysical journey into Wolverine's head, too?
Yes.
The end of the Civil War run?
The last issue, yeah.
It was, yeah.
And so this was that again?
I guess, but...
You get the feeling maybe this is what he would have continued on with had he not
Why
gone.
Why didn't he just do it? Oh, because Jeff Loeb had to
it
tell the ultimate
idea.
Saber. Tooth story,
right?
Anyway, I just wanted to mention that because I thought it was a ballsy thing to do.
No, I agree with you. It was very interesting that they basically said you're not as badass as you used to be.
Connor, take us to the other side of town.
Well, first of all, Ron, I would have hated to have been you this week because there was a lot of really good books.
Oh, it was ridiculously impossible. I mean, it was very, very hard. Don't get me wrong. It was with a heavy...
No, absolutely. I'd not envy at least one of the really good books is Green Arrow, Black Canary, number 2, continuing on the momentum of awesomeness from the first issue.
So good.
I laughed so hard reading this issue. The thing that got me the most was Ollie, we found out last issue, Ollie's not dead. He's being imprisoned by the Amazons, and somehow he escapes. They don't show the escape, but he's running naked through the woods, and he just yells, "Catch me if you can, you crazy broads!" And he's naked. I laughed and laughed. That just so perfectly sums up the character of Ollie. Yeah. Black Canary and Speedy and Connor Hawk go in to rescue him, and of course the rescue goes awry because there's only four of them and it's an army of Amazonians. So
what I thought was great was that you know, when the whole exchange between the Amazonians and Black Canary, and when they first got to the island, when you know, they you know, Connor Hawk is kind of, you know, kind of slinks in while Black Canary and Speedy are meeting with the Amazonians because the Amazonians want Black Canary to train them or something like that, you know. And Speedy just immediately starts pissing. The Amazonians don't like Speedy, and she starts arguing, and one of the Amazonians badmouths Speedy, and then just out of nowhere, Black Canary socks her one. I was like, damn, that was great. It was
So. This is really the badass renaissance of Black Canary, but the art is just absolutely phenomenal in this book. It's, you can't even begin to talk about how good the art is. Out of nowhere, this guy is like fantastic.
I don't even feel qualified to talk about how good it is. You know what I mean? Because it's like, and it's like we struggled with the first issue when we talked about it. It was, yeah. You know, it's slightly, you know, it seems kind of like that, you know, animation-y kind of look, but it's not, and it's really, really tight, but it's not thin. It's got heft to it. You know, like, I don't know. This is artistically wise, I think, my favorite book right now.
Cliff Chang, this might be my favorite also. It's just he does the faces and the emotions, and he does the action, and everything is clean.
I can hear Michael Lark crying right now. Oh, that's that's just
different...
hey, no. You said, you know, favorite. There's no degrees of favorite. You just replaced Michael Lark.
I think this might be my new favorite.
Oh man!
Well, because the thing is that don't get me wrong, the art combined with a great story. I mean, that's
yes.
The thing. And I think Michael Lark's doing great work, but I mean, it's kind of slowed down the pace over there on the books he's working on. Whereas this has got all the energy of a great story plus the amazing art. I don't know.
Whatever, man.
These are two guys that really
tell that to Michael.
Working on. I will. I still love you, Michael. Booster
Gold
too, number
Donna.
Four. Hey, Michael Lark's on the show.
Yeah.
Booster Gold.
Jesus.
Michael Lark's the ladies' man?
Yeah, that's true. I draw Matt Murdock.
That would be fantastic if Michael Lark was the ladies' man.
Yeah.
He would be actually my new favorite. Booster Gold number four. Ron, I know you had some issues with this issue.
I did have some issues. I still liked it. I actually found myself liking the art a lot during it,
yep.
Which I thought was interesting.
I liked its ass. I'm gonna stop. Sorry.
But I really liked the art in it. But as the story progressed, I didn't realize that this was gonna wrap up the first story arc.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that they were that. And one of the things I've struggled with this book is, while it's been really great and we love the concept and we love the approach, but like out of the gate we're like, oh, it's Quantum Leap but in DC, and then another issue went and we're like, oh, it's like that, but it's like
the Evil Leapers.
Yeah, the Evil Leapers. And in this one, it's like, oh, okay, it's Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
You know, like they
mean
reveal
Booster Gold's father.
Yeah, Supernova is Booster Gold's father.
What?
And there was literally when Booster Gold pulls off Supernova's mask, and it's literally that's impossible. And he literally said that, and he says
it can't be.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they added it a scream. But why? I don't.
Exactly. See, for me this book is what I was hoping it would be when I saw the solicitation, is that it's basically DC porn.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
It's like they're touching on every like seminal moment with the characters we missed. This issue was Barry Allen. Next issue is going to be Barbara Gordon, Batgirl.
So which I thought was crazy because it ended with the next arc, and it ends with Booster Gold saying, "Okay, we want to go. You know, I want to go save Blue Beetle now." And Rex Hunter is like, "No, Rip Hunter, right?
Rex Hunter, the bad guy."
Yeah, Rip Hunter, the time cop, or whatever it is. He goes, no, we can't do that. First, we need to save, because Black Canary's not supposed to be in charge of the Justice League. It's supposed to be Barbara Gordon as Batgirl.
Right.
Which is like, that's could change everything. I know it won't.
It's not going to, but yeah.
But still, it's like crazy. So,
if this is DC,
and they're
going to
undo Killing Joke.
They're not going to.
No, that's why I thought it was crazy. They're going to go back. The next issue is called, it says next, Killing Jokes. Like, you're going to go to Killing Joke?
That's
really?
That's a set on Geoff Johns.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, jeez. If this is DC porn, does that mean World War Hulk was supposed to be Marvel porn?
Well, because this is DC porn because it's hitting the moments in time. You know, it's going back to the classic moment. This is in this issue, they go back to the moment when Barry Allen became the Flash. So you got the reproduction of the classic panel with the chemicals hitting Barry from, you know, the cameras behind him.
All right.
Porn. Batman and the Outsiders, number one. Talk about porn. Chuck Dixon back on Batman. I needed a cigarette after this. It was so good. I don't
brilliant.
Even smoke. He's, you know the whole worry from Mark Waid back in the Flash.
Yeah, I know how that feels.
Chuck Dixon went right back into it.
Wow.
It was like slipping on the old suit.
Yeah, slipping it on. That's real nice. Do it slowly, Chuck.
All right.
You know, he does this at work all day long.
Michael Lark works with us?
But it was great. It was basically a Black Ops mission where Batman coordinated it from the Batcave, and it was featured all the characters, and it was just... you can't really... Batman's a tough character to write, tougher than I think people think, to write him well. And you can tell when it's not right, and sometimes you can't explain why it is, but you just know it. And just the tone was there, the dialogue was right. It felt right.
Let me ask you a question.
He wasn't super angry. He wasn't all lighthearted.
Well, yeah, I guess that's it, because when Dixon was on it last time, Batman was in the most grim of grimitude. So has he lightened him up a
little? Not the entire time, though. He wrote it for years.
Right, well, yeah, I know, but sort of the last time that I remember him doing it was at the time where, like, Batman just no longer knew how to talk to people, and he just grunted.
Right.
I actually kind of worried about that. Like, that he would just not have the current one, but I guess Dixon's an old hand.
Yeah, if there's anybody he gets, it's Batman, and it's a good team. Catwoman, Martian Manhunter, Metamorpho, Katana.
Cool. I missed it. I forgot to pick this up.
It was really, really good. The next issue comes out in 2 weeks.
All right, I'll go check it out.
Another unexpected really good one was Teen Titans East Special, which I picked up on a whim. I wasn't really expecting to buy it, but I ended up doing it. Judd Winnick was writing it. It's a one-issue special that's leading into they're launching a second Titans book featuring the original Titans and the Marv Wolfman era Titans, basically the new Teen Titans back.
Does the world need a second Titans book?
Nightwing, Flash, Starfire, Wonder Girl, Cyborg, Changeling, Raven.
Was the first book selling that well? That they were going to do
this? I don't know.
That's amazing. Like, that would be like if they were like doing a second initiative book.
I feel like one of those two books are gone in 12 issues.
Yeah,
maybe, but the Teen Titans is the actual Teen Titans, and this new Titans book is going to be the old New Titans.
This is like the last time when the old New Titans became the Titans. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this issue starts off, the first path is a flashback to the actual New Titans with Robin and Wonder Girl and Starfire and all them. The weirdest thing about this issue was, and this is something I have not seen very often, the art from Ian Churchill. He drew Dick Grayson with hairy legs.
See, this is what you get with a fan like Connor that you're not going to get on other shows. Go ahead with this, because I really want to hear it. Yeah, I would hear that.
It was odd because he's got his short shorts on, and you don't ever see him drawn with hairy legs.
Kind of like at the end of the Robin era, it was just awkward for everybody. Did somebody put pants on that kid?
He went through puberty, and it was kind of like watching Wolverine fight in shorts.
Panties.
Yeah, so that was odd. And then the second half was Cyborg training a new Titans team, and they ended up getting all wiped out and murdered horribly. Hawk and Dove, Tower Boy, Lagoon Boy, Son of Vulcan, Little Barda. They all get massacred.
Names like that, they deserve to be massacred.
Yeah, Lagoon Boy?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's it. So, I mean, but the issue starts off with Cyborg trying to bring back the new Titans, bring them all together again, and they all turn down.
Yeah, because they're afraid he's going to get them killed.
And so then he says, I'm going to make a new team, and then he does, and then they all get killed. So now the next issue is...
And they said, yeah, see, we were right. We shouldn't have gone with you.
Yeah, so it was really good. Now I'm actually looking forward to the next issue. Finally, the cavalcade of DC ends with Nightwing 138, which is the second part of the resurrection of Ra's al Ghul. Fabian Nicieza on the writing.
Yep. Wow.
He defected.
He's been on for years, yeah.
Don Kramer on art.
Ooh, really?
Who I think, I might be wrong, but is getting better with every issue he draws, because he was actually really, really good in this one. And Fabian Nicieza should stay on this book, because he really gets Nightwing, which is apparently the hardest thing to do in comics. But it was a fun story, he got the characters right, Nightwing goes and rescues Robin and Damian from about 1,000 ninjas, so there's just a huge ninja fight between them, and basically the four of them fighting thousands of ninjas in the Batcave.
Wow.
And he got it, he, it wasn't... Dick is a hard character to write. He's either a Boy Scout or he's like a little Batman.
If
he's wrong, right. He's either written too far one way or too far the other way. And the proper way to write him is somewhere right in the middle.
Isn't he like a pimp, though? Isn't he like just a badass ass hound?
No, well, he is, but see, the thing is, he's always written as the guy who is but doesn't realize it.
Oh. And that's wrong?
You know what I mean?
That's like, right.
No, that's correct. Like, he's the guy that he's the best guy the rumor doesn't realize he is.
Oh.
Ah, like
he's,
me.
He's like Ron.
He's money and he doesn't even know it.
Right.
Bringing it all the way back to 1996.
Mikey.
Nice.
So, he was good. And this was a really good one. And that's all I have to say about that.
Cool. Is he going to stay on the book?
I have no idea. All these Ra's al Ghul writers are different. Peter Milligan's not really a regular writer anything.
Thank God.
Keep him away. Okay, moving on.
Probably the best single issue I read this week was Fable 67, which you guys obviously wouldn't have read. It's just this big story that's been building for a really long time, and there's funny. This is a really big story that's been going on for months, and every time an issue comes back, I don't feel the need for a recap. It just picks up right where it was. It's been a ton of fun. I really feel
like... Does it come out on a regular schedule?
Yeah, it does. It's not late. It's pretty much every 4 weeks. I don't feel like I'm waiting for it very often. Basically, it's just the Frog Prince, who was like... You guys would have seen him. He was just the janitor. Since then, he's become like a big leader, badass king, and he's got Excalibur, and he's starting to fight all of the evil hordes of the adversary, and it's just this huge, huge battle that is just building up and building up and building up, and you really get the sense that this first epoch of this book is about to be over, which is sort of what Willingham told us when we talked to him in San Diego, but
right.
it's just progressing so nicely, like... It just keeps building.
It's a long epoch.
It's fantastic. And then I guess he's got plans to keep it going because he was going to end it.
He was going to end the series?
Yeah, no, he had an end for it, but he realized that...
that he's got a cash cow in his hands. Papa needs a new car.
He had an end, and he realized that if he left that end for too long, it would spoil. So he was going to use that end and then just keep telling stories with it. Yeah. That's what I feel like this is... really building up, because this feels like this is going to be like the final confrontation coming up soon. This was just fantastic. It was just a
awesome.
Great comic.
I'm not afraid to admit that I somewhat zone out during your Fables talk, only because I want to read the book eventually, so okay. I don't want to pick up any...
I was trying to be vague.
That's fine. I was waiting for you to take a breath, and then I know to come back in.
Anyway. Actually, what happens is he mutes his microphone, and he goes, la 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 la.
Ron, who wrote the pick of the week?
Brian Reed.
Josh, who wrote The Circle?
Brian Reed?
What's The Circle?
Yes!
The Circle. There it is, Ron. Come on.
We came full circle.
Oh, nice.
The Circle.
I'm going to tell you what happened this week. Image Comics
released... The Circle
released,
number one, Image Comics.
Image Thank Comics you. Released two non-superhero, non-supernatural spy books. One was The Circle and one was Killing Girl number four. One I liked a lot. Well, not a lot. But in comparison, let's talk about The Circle. You know what? This wasn't A material. I would say this was a B plus, maybe a B.
Yeah, it was very solid.
Very solid, but a good starting point. You know, and it's
kind of like
he's not. I don't think Brian Reed has matured yet as a writer. I don't think he's hit his stride. I don't think he's an expert at this. But this is a book, to me, like, all the seeds are there. You could make a great series out of this. And it's just every week I look for a new book that's coming out that isn't a horror book or a superhero. I don't want to read any more of those, for the most part, unless they're amazing. So every time, like, sort of a real crime or the spy thing comes out, I want to see what can be done with that. And so I was really excited to get this. Great art.
Ian Hossfeld.
Yeah, who was also from the video game world. He was, like, a design artist or something like that. Basically,
it's Queen of Country Light, kind of.
Yeah, it is. There's some spies, and there's a whole bunch of intrigue going on, and there's a missile train. That's basically where we're at right now.
It's not a lot happened, but it was really interesting. It was good
for two guys who don't really have much experience. I mean, Brian Reed has got some now, but he's never had his own creator-owned book. And this guy has never drawn a regular book. I was really impressed. It can only get better. So I'm going to definitely give them the benefit of the doubt and hope that this gets better. But if you're in the mood for something new or different, this is not a bad place to check.
Yeah, and another thing that's good about this book is Brian Reed. It shows he's got more in him than just
definitely
Marvel characters. He's also coming out with an Image spy book, which is
this is a great looking book. I just gotta say, like, I love the way this book is drawn.
Yeah, it makes I kind of wish this. Yeah. The art's kind of the only knock on Queen of Country was the art was always all over the place, depending on who was drawing it.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great art in that book, but just sometimes because it changed and everybody was just a dude, as we've said before, it was hard to tell who was who. The color in this obviously helps. Beautifully produced book.
Yeah.
I would definitely recommend you go pick it up. The other book that came out, Killing Girl number 4, which we had very high hopes for in the first issue, except for Connor, you didn't really like it.
I didn't like it.
Okay.
I saw the writing on the wall.
Talk about a comic book disaster.
Listen, thank you. There was I picked this up and I looked and I was like, wait a minute, that's not Frank Espinosa is supposed to be the artist. It's a 5-issue miniseries.
Yep.
And it's a fill-in artist.
Yeah, he was replaced with issue 3, dude.
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
I might have missed issue 3.
Yeah, I think you did.
This was
he did 2 issues and then bailed, and then who knows why, but, you know, who cares? It's not even worth talking about.
There was no, I know, and that's it, but, like, it started off with something interesting, and this was just, like, porn.
Yeah. Like, as soon as I heard that he left with issue 3, I stopped.
Did you stop?
Two. Yeah.
So. There are interesting ideas in this that I kind of like, but overall, it is just, it's not good. And now I bought 4 of them, so.
Damn it, Eric Larson owes you money.
No, it was that one.
God, what a week. I'm exhusted.
It's not over yet.
We're not done.
It's not done, but if you haven't bought your comics this week yet, or you liked any of the books we talked about, and you live in the New York metro area, you should head over to Jim Hanley's Universe. It's one of our country's best, most progressive comic book stores, retailers out there. Jim Hanley's, they've got a great selection of comics from superhero comics to indie books to black and white to a little bit of the adult fare. They've got it all. They got a really great
in the back.
They got a really great mini comic.
Yeah, that's where I also keep my adult fare as well.
They got a really great mini comic section, so you should check it out. So go to Jim Hanley's Universe where art and literature meet. They've got 2 locations. The first one's in Staten Island at 325 New Dorp Lane, and their second one is in Manhattan across the street from the Empire State Building on 33rd Street. So go check them out, and if you're online, you can go to their webpage at jhuniverse.com or go to MySpace and visit them at myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe and become their friend and tell them that iFanboy sent you. And even if you shop there, if you go in when you're checking out, just say, hey, I came here because of iFanboy. So.
And just a personal testimonial, like, we've done a lot of shows there. Like, you've seen people who come in, they had signings. They had Kevin O'Neill, the artist on League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the other night. Like, there's great stuff going on there. And also, if you don't live in the New York area and you want to get something, they have a lot of books and things like that that are hard to find.
Yeah, and they'll ship it to you. They want your money. So.
Like those out of
but
like
in a good way,
out of print League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, absolute editions. They have a bunch of them.
Shut up!
I know.
I was going to buy those.
They had several,
much like the mythical Yeti or the Loch Ness Monster. There have been many sightings of Scott Pilgrim Volume 4 recently,
wow.
But only now did it come out.
Now, typically, we only talk about the kind of floppy monthly issues that come out. We don't really talk on the show. We don't really talk about the trade paperbacks or graphics.
Damn it, we used to.
But it's because so much comes out. Anyway,
this is kind of an issue.
Let's not talk about it in front of the audience.
Comic issue.
No, this I would. I mean,
yeah.
It's just it comes out with big. What are you talking about?
It's a personal issue.
I thought it was a team issue, an iFanboy issue.
No, I would have probably picked this.
You would have been against the rules.
I don't care about the rules because it doesn't come out in issue form.
So finally, the mythical Scott Pilgrim volume number 4. Which and the thing is, Josh, I'm right. I'm kind of with you, Connor. I'm kind of with you. It is kind of an issue because it only comes out in this format. And honestly, I probably would have came close to picking it as well because of all the 97 books I read this week, this is the one I could not put down.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
I was telling Ron, I am befuddled by this book. I'm befogied by this book a little bit. I don't know what it is that's good about it. I don't even know if I like it.
Wait, let me interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim, Volume 4, called Gets It Together, written and drawn by Brian Lee O'Malley, published by Oni Press.
Correct.
Okay.
And this is the fourth one. They're about 10 – I think they've upped the price a little. This one was, let's say $12. It's manga size. There is no other book like this, and I think the reason that I said I would have picked it is just that there is nothing this original, and I'm sort of trying to figure out if I thought it was contrived or if I thought it was it. But it seems like it's completely original, and just like it's just what comes out of this guy. I don't get the sense that there's a lot of effort behind it, and it's just the strangest thing. And I almost feel like I'm a little too old to be getting it. Like I'm listening to a band that I'm too old to be listening to, but it's really I don't even want to say it's good, but I think it's good. I think it's really. What do you think?
I mean, it's to me, and I read it, and Josh, I read it Wednesday night, and then after we talked today, I read it again. And first off, I just want to get out of the way. How much of a cock tease was the first 5 pages in full color?
Yeah,
I was like, why would you do that to me? It looks so good in full color, but I like it black, but I like it black and white too. So it was like, anyway. But I read it again, and the thing about it is that. You're right. I don't think there's a lot of effort behind it, and that's not in like he's not trying hard, but I think it's coming to Brian Lee O'Malley effortlessly.
And I
think that when this is all said and done, or for whatever reason, this absolute edition or this, you know, omnibus or whatever, the full collection is really going to stand as being one of the most – I think one of the most important works of this decade, in that nothing else seems so natural and representative of a generation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not my generation.
Don't worry about that. I'm not.
There's things in it where it just feels like I'm like these characters are, you know, a couple of differences. Like they would like Napoleon Dynamite.
But the thing is that I don't feel the generation gap.
But that's not important though.
I'm not pointing out the generation gap. What I'm pointing out is like there is stuff in this that the it's all about one main character, Scott Pilgrim, and his life and how he's, you know, he's in a band and he's got a girlfriend and he's got a weird living situation and he needs a job and he's just kind of kind of floating through life, and in this issue he kind of, as the title says, gets it together. And it just, while it's very manga drawn and like there's, you know, a lot of video game kind of references and like little kind of like design elements in the storytelling and stuff like that, it seems very realistic. And like a lot of the dialogue is just like, I laughed out loud and I could see us saying some of this stuff to each other.
Yeah. Well, and then I think that's the strength of it. And that's where I say
so you're not even mentioning the craziness.
Well, yeah, I'm avoiding the craziness because the parts that are grounded in reality are just so well done that it balances the craziness. Because like we said when I first read the first volume, what, like now 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, it takes a left turn.
It does. And now we've gotten used to it.
Yes.
Like since then, that first time you're like, what the hell? And you don't know what to think about it. Since then, you take all of this other stuff for granted.
Yeah.
And then
totally.
it goes away in the story. Like, so do they. Like, he's walking to school. The dude comes at him with a sword, chops a bus in half. He runs away from him. And then it's like, oh, yeah, I got a job. Like, it's
not only is it like, oh, yeah, I got a job, but it's like, oh, that guy just tried to kill me. I got to go to work. You know, like, it's like this reality that this book takes place in.
Yeah.
And so. It's
this is the most wildly original book I can think of in years.
And it takes all these elements.
New discovery in years.
It really is. I really think it's going to be one of the most important comics around.
No, you're
really
right. Because what it does is it's taking the elements of all of these things and it's blending them in this way. Like to have manga come together with sort of indie comics, to come together with video game culture, to come together with young Canadians and...
And romance.
And chicks making out with each other. Like, it's just the
and
weirdest...
music.
Yeah.
Music. Yeah, exactly. It really is a representative of the times. And, I mean, like, it's funny because, you know, Josh, we were talking before we did the show, and we were talking about the relating aspect, but, like, for years, and Connor can attest to this, like at one point, you know, he's, like, when he's peeing, there's, like, a little, like, kind of pixelated graphic, with, like, pee, and there's a meter, and it's going down, you know, and, like, and there's, like, when he does something, he gets experience points. But, like, for years, ever since college and high school, I've been, like, when I was sick, I'm, like, oh, I'm down some hit points. Uh-huh. You know, like, I mean, it's that same concept, but I was doing D&D as opposed to video games, you know, and like, I never really realized that I did that until I see it kind of, you know, serialized in this comic, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, like, and admittedly, it does take the left turn and is crazy, and there's some weird subspace that exists in his girlfriend's head that allows him to travel around Toronto. I don't get it.
I don't think it doesn't matter, though.
Either, yeah, because the other parts are so great. And it's
no,
just
see, but the way that you're saying that is that you'd have to discount that, and
I'm not. It totally fits. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I don't mean to discount it. Yeah. So.
It worked. You know what I've decided this time is that I really like the character of Scott Pilgrim. And I don't know if I had decided that before or whatever. What's funny is that I started this off, I didn't remember a damn thing. But with very little time going, I was like, all right, yeah, I remember where we were. I'm back on track. I didn't have to go look at the other book or anything.
Well, the first page guide is really helpful in the beginning.
Yes, yeah, it was.
And Brian Lee O'Malley is just funny. I mean, he's got a reverent, like, in the back, there's the how to read this comic, kind of like the manga books,
right,
but like about the way we read comics, which was great. You know, like there's a self-acknowledgement or just like there's a lot of really good humor in this, I mm-hmm. think. And I think he's using the medium of comics, you know, like when they're on the elevator, and the elevator that had the down arrow and the up arrow for whatever direction they were going in. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's being really innovative. And I've got to give credit to the store I shop at, dubbed it really well. This is the Harry Potter of comics in that everyone's been waiting for it. And when one comes out, people they need to get their hands on it as soon as they can and read it as quickly as possible.
Every single comment I've seen about it has been, I couldn't put this book down. I couldn't stop reading it. I read it so fast. I flew through this book. I've got like a 30-minute commute to and from work. I read about 3/4 of it on the one train ride.
Yeah.
I flew through it.
I've read it twice already. I mean, like, so.
And it was, I haven't read a book in so this long that's made me this excited, this happy, this, I was in some sort of joy bubble reading this book. You know, I was laughing. I was excited. It took me back to being 20 years old. It captures it so well when everything is exciting. Everything is important. Everything is, every high is super high. Every low is super low. You know, he perfectly captures the 17 to 23 range.
Yep.
Have you read Harry Potter? You haven't, right?
No.
I think you're right, is what I was about to say. As I'm thinking about it and looking through it, because Harry Potter grows on you. Like, the first one you read, and you're like, that was kind of fun, whatever. And then you read the second one, and you're like, and then when you get to the third, fourth, fifth ones, you're like, it's the same thing. Like, I must read this now, immediately. And at the end, you look, and there are a plethora of characters. Like, they're all sitting around a table at the end, and you're like, oh, I know who all these people are now, and they're all different.
And you care about each one of them, and it's just amazing. And I keep going back to the dialogue and some of the jokes. I mean, like, I love the running gags, but, like, you know, early in the issue, one of Scott's friends says, you know, if your life had a face, I'd punch it in the balls.
Yeah.
And, like, that joke pops up later on. Like, it comes back from somebody else. And then, like, at one point when one of his friends is moving to an apartment and there's a guy with a car with all her stuff, he's like, who's this guy? She's like, you've met him, like, 4 times. And then 20 pages later, he's back, and Scott Pilgrim's like, who's this guy? And like, because that's happened to us. You know what I mean? Like, I no other comic have I felt like I could relate to this book. You know?
Scott Pilgrim is – he's endearingly stupid.
Yes.
Yeah. That's exactly it. But it's stupid's almost too strong. I love the page.
Endearingly clueless.
And it's kind of like everybody accepts it and it's okay with him. And, like, it's funny. Like, Stephen Stills, by the way, they call him Stephen Stills, which is still funny to me.
I love how that name, Stephen Stills, and then Young.
Young Neil makes me laugh every single time.
Right, yeah. But that happens too. I mean,
I doesn't though, because I don't have friends with cool nicknames, and that's something that exists in TV space, and everybody wants to have friends with cool nicknames, and we don't.
I had him in college.
I have friends with. I mean, like, I have a friend who I say his first and last name whenever I see him, and people have cool nicknames. I mean,
either way, you either have it or you want it. So one way or the other,
right? Or sometimes they don't know they have a nickname, and when it's used when they're not around.
That's just mean. I loved the landlord scene in this for some reason.
Yeah,
they were alluding to it for pages and pages. He scares me, and they show the guy, and his face the whole time is just a sneer. Just he's just sort of got his eyes narrowed at them, and it's relentless. Like there's not one point in this book where I don't even think I would have the ability to be like, oh, that was stupid. Like, it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
just keeps moving forward and just. So it's really good, but it took me a while to figure out. I don't know why it's good, but I think it's just because it's so fresh, I suppose. God, that sounded cheesy.
But it is. But I mean, it's true. Yeah. There's nothing else like it. It's really well written. The art's great. I mean, there's nothing bad about this book. And even the dating stuff, you can totally relate to being 20 years old and having the 23 years old having the girl you love, but then this other girl shows up and she's hot and you're 23 and you don't know what to do, and you know, it's like and then there's ninjas. Maybe that was just me, I don't know though.
Yeah, and it's just so good. I mean, like when Scott's girlfriend wants him to take off the wristbands that he's wearing, and then like literally like 50 pages later in a scene, you don't even notice that he has it on. She's just like, I thought we weren't doing that.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, you know, like, it's just like, it's totally like, you could close your eyes and see yourself in this world until the crazy samurai swords break.
But even that, like, there's a scene where he's fighting, he's got a, basically the crazy conceit is he's, to win his girlfriend, he has to defeat her 7 exes, which you find out aren't all ex-boyfriends in this one. Yeah. And, there's a scene where he's fighting one, and he doesn't have a weapon, and he pulls a sword out of his chest when he realizes he really is in love with the girl Ramona, and it's God has earned the power of love, and that was like a great scene.
Yeah,
like,
you feel
excited and happy for him. And even in the crazy, fantastical elements of it, there's still some great emotional, true-to-life stuff.
And I love how it's...
That's just a representation of realizing and accepting that you love someone.
And I love how it's broken up into chapters, and the chapters go back to Volume 1. And I love a lot of the devices. Like, in this issue, the ellipsis is a brand new device that he uses way more, which I thought was great to get across silence. Yeah. You know, and to get across that, like, awkward beat, that pause, like he's sitting on the couch and he just looks at somebody, and then it goes to the next panel and the person reacts, you know, like...
The lettering's actually really good in this, in that sense.
Yeah.
Because they're, like, you'll have word balloons or the regular stuff, and then there'll be sort of sideways, you know, like tiny word balloons in the background and things like that. There's just... He gets across really well.
And the pacing is excellent. Yeah. Pacing is amazing. Yeah. So we could go on and on, I think, for a whole podcast about this book. But yeah. So if you haven't checked out Scott Pilgrim, Oni Press, go back to Volume 1, get up to Volume 4. You'll finish it in an hour, trust us. And you'll go back and you'll read it 6 more times. So,
he has not dropped the ball.
Not.
It's only gotten better, which is, I think, pretty impressive.
So that was
2011.
That was
usually, you can have the next one.
Yeah, that's the only sad thing is that it takes him forever to put it out. This is supposed to come out in the summer, right? It wasn't supposed to be out by San Diego.
Yeah.
In fact, didn't he not go to a convention because he had to stay home to work on it?
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember
one of
that.
The cons.
I remember that. Yeah. So, oh well. So, that was in lieu of our email and voicemail segment. But if you want to talk to us about Scott Pilgrim or tell us about this week's comics, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call us at 1-888-FANBOYS 326-2697 and make sure to keep the voicemails under 30 seconds or under.
Netflix has over 75,000 movie titles, so with no late feeds, you put them all on a list on the website and they send you the top however many, and then you watch them send them back. Free shipping both ways, fast delivery. And if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, you can get a 2-week free trial from Netflix.
This is a tough week. So if you are listening to this podcast for the first time and don't know who we are, go to ifanboy.com and check it all out. That's where you can read my review of Captain Marvel, as well as what all the other folks in the iFanboy universe read and liked this week, as well as we've got a great blog posts and articles and stuff like that. I did a big write-up on Marvel's new digital comic application. Go check that out.
Mm.
So ifanboy.com.
Go to ifanboy.com/store. You can find all the books we talk about on the video show every week, as well as our 3 recommendations all across all media, DVDs and movies and video games, all that stuff the kids like. It's all there at ifanboy.com/store.
Speaking of video show, you mentioned that. Yes. Every Saturday in the afternoon, the video show shows up on our website, not at revision3.com/ifanboy. You will have, if you're listening on Sunday, the show that just came out this past Saturday was the follow-up to the Tote Bag Challenge.
Tote Bag.
So you'll find out what we liked and what we didn't like and whether anybody did good or not. Next week, y'all best slap leather and rustle up there, partner, or something or other. Yeah, what did that man say? I do not understand. I know that they had chaps. That's very nice.
If you want an iFanboy t-shirt, you can go to jinx.com/iFanboy. Got them there. They say iFanboy in the front, intern on the back. If you go to Intern Nation, you can send a picture of yourself in wearing the shirt to iFanboy and to jinx.com. You can send us a jinx. They will send you free stickers. And who doesn't like stickers?
And keep in mind, the holidays are coming. So ifanboy.com/store, jinx.com/ifanboy. Give your friends iFanboy stuff.
I think you should give your mom an iFanboy t-shirt.
I will.
That's all I'm saying. Not you, Ron. Everyone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I want to see moms across the land wearing iFanboy t-shirts.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, there's various places we can be your friend on myspace.com/ifanboy or comicspace.com/if or Verb or Facebook or I was losing it and I just decided why not. You could go to twitter.com/ifanboy or we all three have Twitter accounts which we twit.
Yes. If you like the show, you can write a review on iTunes for both this audio show and the video show, and better than that, you can tell your friends, tell your comic store pals, tell your comic store owners. Spread the word.
If you dig iFanboy in general and you like what we do and you want to see more of it, You can go to ifanboy.com/donations and you could throw a little money our way, help us out with our bills. We got a lot of good stuff coming for you in 2008. Trust us, you'll enjoy it. And a lot of it is because of some of you have been so generous, so we thank you very much. So
that you said that before show. And it became the video show, and I'm just like, what is it now? What are we going to have to do? Oh, no.
It's animation, actually, Josh. Yeah.
I come to your house and clean. It's iFanboy in 08. I'll make your drapes shine.
So until next week, you all better go read Scott Pilgrim. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
Yeah, I'm Michael Lark. This joke doesn't make any sense, but I can tell you it's going to come back.
poor Michael Lark.
Yeah. He draws realistically is the thing.
I thought you were Michael Lark.
He also talks about himself in the third person sometimes because ladies love that.